We're in James chapter 5, so it's a new outline.
Something else you can pray about.
We're in the last chapter of James. So it's always the preacher's predicament is always, what do we do next after James? Because we've got maybe two more nights after tonight and we will be done. So, I've started working on some lessons already about the Bible and prophecy. And it's good. Not because I'm doing it, but it's just good stuff. And I'm trying to format it into lessons for Wednesday nights and do along the lines of kind of what we do here with fill in the blanks and so forth. So pray about that, because that gives me a month to get it started. I've actually got the first two lessons kind of finished, and I don't think one lesson will be for one Wednesday night. You know how I am. I can't do it that quickly. It gets drug out a little bit. Well, we will be working on that. So that will be coming up after we finish the book of James. So tonight we're in James chapter 5. The last chapter of the book of James. The book of James, if you remember from our beginning, is a book that focuses on perfection. The word perfect, in some sense, is in the book of James. I believe it's five times. And that's what James is working on, our practical side. Working on perfecting our practice. And he's talked about many things, from trials and temptations to the tongue, to fightings and wars among the congregation, all of these different things. Well, he settles on a theme here in James chapter 5 that we're going to look at beginning tonight. We'll read the first six verses. James says, "Go to now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. Ye have heaped together treasure for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. And the cities of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabbath. Ye have lived in pleasure on the earth and have been wanton. Ye have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. Ye have condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you." He gives, he puts his emphasis in these six verses on riches. And we're going to call this in our outline, the warning to the wealthy. James gives a warning to the wealthy. You remember he already talked about this back in chapter 2, about having respect to the man that comes in with the rich clothing, the expensive suit, and giving him due and giving him credit, whereas the other fellow that comes in shabbily dressed is put in the back row and not given much attention. And James addressed that and the difference between the poor and the rich and being partial. Well, he returns to that theme here in chapter 5. And he again begins to talk about this thing about wealth. In verse number 1 to 3, we see the two things we'll see tonight. First of all, the corruption of their wealth. The corruption of their wealth. Verse 2, he said, "Your riches are corrupted, and your garments are moth-eaten." The corruption of their wealth. Verse 1, "Go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl." People usually associate riches with happiness, with pleasure, with mirth, with celebration. But rich people are not always happy people. James says, "Go to now, you rich man, weep and howl." Why? "For your miseries that shall come upon you." James is speaking to these Jewish people in the day in which he's writing. James is writing approximately 50 AD, one of the first New Testament books that were written. It's written previous to Acts chapter 15. We don't know the exact date, but it's previous to Acts 15 and the big council with Paul, and all that's not happened yet. And James is addressing the church that's been scattered, the believers that have been scattered because of persecution. And he says to these Jewish people, he says to the rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. We can always apply that to present tense, that riches don't give happiness. That being wealthy does not assure anything. It doesn't assure good health. It doesn't assure friendship. In fact, the wealthier you are, the more skeptical you have to be about those that want to be your friends. And so James is addressing a current problem with them, but we also notice this. He said, for your miseries that shall come upon you. That's future tense. Shall come upon you. So James is almost being prophetical in telling them, you're enjoying it while you've got it, but you better watch out. You better weep and howl because miseries are going to come upon you. Now we can look at that in two regards. How are their miseries going to come? He said, your miseries that shall come upon you. Well, if this is 50 AD, it is about that time, it's only going to be 20 more years until Rome comes in, Nero comes in, and they burn Jerusalem to the ground. They burn the city of God. There is no city to you and I that means what Jerusalem means to the Jews. As Americans, I guess our iconic city is Washington, D.C. But if something were to happen to Washington, D.C., there are already plans made in the higher echelons of our military. If anything happens in Washington, they relocate the capital. And wherever that capital goes, that's our capital. It's Washington, D.C. does not have that special meaning like Jerusalem does to a Jew. There's no city like Jerusalem. It is not only the capital of their state, but it is the center of their religion. I think the only other religion that has anything close to that would be Islam with the city of Mecca. It does mean a lot to them, but even that pales in comparison to Jerusalem. And in 70 AD, Rome came in and burned it to the ground. And here is James telling those rich men, these Jewish people, you better be careful and how, because your miseries that shall come upon you. And yet that might be insufficient, because he's writing to the Jews that are scattered. Well, if they're scattered to other places, how are their riches going to come to naught when Jerusalem is destroyed? So a lot of people want to put this and point to 70 AD and say that it's talking about, but it does, the puzzle pieces don't seem to fit perfectly. So what other prophetical event could he be talking about that's saying to the rich men that miseries are going to come upon you? And you'll notice at the end of verse 3, he says, you have heaped together treasure for the last days. Don't ever try to restrict the Bible. The Bible is so rich. The Bible is so full. James is writing in 50 AD. What he's writing has application to the day he's writing in. It also can be applied prophetically to 20 years following when what happens to Jerusalem happens. But it's also looking, I think, another 2,000 years down the line to the last days. The last days are mentioned 8 times in Scripture. Time-wise, it would seem that it begins with the ministry of Jesus Christ, Hebrews 1:2, that the Lord has spoken to us in these last days by His Son, Jesus Christ. That's the New Testament. But then most of the references talk about the tribulation period, talk about God's wrath during that time, talk about the millennial reign. So the emphasis of this time is that tribulation period, those last days. And he's telling the Jews, he said, you better weep and howl, because there's going to be miseries that come upon you. Prophetically, again, the Bible's shooting at 3 different things at one time. It's not a double barrel, it's a triple barrel. It's got the practical application, it's got the prophetical in 70 AD, and the prophetical 2,000 years down the line. These Jews are trusting in their riches to get them through difficult times. Oh, when the tribulation comes and you got to take the mark of the beast, that's all right, we've got a bunch of stuff stored up. You go down in the storm cellar down there, and we've been storing up dry goods for years and years, and we've got enough to get us through anything that happens. James says, you better weep and howl, because miseries are going to come upon you. Look at Proverbs 11:4. Proverbs 11:4, the first half of the verse fits perfectly into what we're talking about right now. Go to, you rich man, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Proverbs 11:4 says, riches profit not in the day of wrath. When God's judgment falls, money isn't going to do anything. I've seen pictures, and I'm always skeptical, but I've seen pictures supposedly of the streets of Venezuela right now. And in Venezuela, with its staunch socialism, apparently, according to the pictures I've seen anyways, money is not worth anything. And they're showing pictures of the streets and the gutters littered with paper money, Venezuelan money, because it just has no value right now. It means absolutely nothing. Now again, I'm always questioning what I see with that because I'm not seeing it with my own eyes in that country. But that does picture what's going to happen one of these days. Money just isn't going to mean anything. The economy is going to drop. You know, that's what everybody's always worried about, the economy. One of the presidential candidates, what did he say years ago? It's the economy, stupid. That was one of the slogans of one of the presidential candidates. Well, here he said, go to, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Verse number 2, your riches are corrupted. Notice he says three things here in verse number 2 and 3. First of all, your riches are corrupted. Now notice something. He said in verse number 1, for your miseries that shall come upon you. Pay attention to every word in the Bible because it's so exact. So what is he telling them? Look to the future. Your miseries are going to come upon you. But he says in verse 2, your riches are going to be corrupted. He said your riches are corrupted. Not are going to be. They are now. The miseries haven't come yet. You'll howl and weep later. But even right now, while you're happy and joyous and celebrating, your riches are corrupted. Second of all, he says your garments are moth-eaten. Moth-eaten simply means full of holes. Now I'm sure when those fellows put on their gay apparel, as it calls it in James chapter 2, their very bright, colorful clothing, I'm sure it didn't have any holes in it, other than where they put their arms, stuck their head out. It was not moth-eaten. But he said to them, your garments are moth-eaten. Well, it didn't look that way. Their riches didn't look corrupted. Their garments didn't look moth-eaten. Number 3, he says in verse 3, your gold and silver is cankered. The word cankered means to rust or to oxidize. That's what metals do. They oxidize. They rust. Your gold and silver is cankered. Not will be, it is. Don't trust in riches. Riches won't get you through, and riches are not the answer now. Your riches are corrupted. Your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered. Then he goes back to the future. The rust of them shall be a witness against you. Those things that you're trusting in now are going to burn you in the end. Burn you so much that it says, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. What so many today are working so hard to get is going to be a witness against them. You know, when one pursues riches, they usually compromise character. We've got our politicians, and I'm just going to say it. We've got a president now that is a millionaire. No, excuse me. Somebody called him a millionaire on a TV show, and he corrected them. He's a billionaire. And even as we speak now, the Democratic debate is going on, I think, in Nevada right now. And the top two candidates are a millionaire, that would be Sanders, and a billionaire, that would be Bloomberg. Money, 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 money. And that's what the world goes after. And that's who makes it, that's who rises to the top, it seems. And you know what the Bible says about that? It says, your riches are corrupted. Now, that's not a personal slam against the men. I'm just saying about everything that the world values is corrupted, it's moth-eaten, it's cankered. Now again, we like money. We need money. The old expression is, money talks. Somebody coined this phrase, if money talks, the only thing it ever says to me is goodbye. We need money, but it is not the end all. Those things are corrupted. Those things are moth-eaten. Those things are cankered. They'll be a witness against you. They'll eat your flesh as it were fire. Earthly treasures are all going to be given up and gone one of these days. That's why the Bible tells us in Matthew chapter 6 and verse number 20, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt. Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, but in heaven. Again, the money down here comes in handy. It's needed. But here are those that James is giving a warning to because of their trusting in their wealth. What does he say to them at the end of verse number 3? Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days. Now the last days are not when you turn 65 to the end of your life. I have heard, believe it or not, someone take that text and say that's why you should not prepare for retirement. Because you're not to lay up treasure for your last days. That's not what that's talking about. It's very practical to lay up money for your retirement, for your later years. But he said, you have heaped together treasure for the last days. Heaping together treasure, that means hoarding. That's what that is, hoarding. Having more than necessary. Having more than needful. I think of that man in Luke chapter 16 that fared sumptuously every day. That rich man that had more than he needed, clothed in purple and fine linen, and fared sumptuously every day, sitting in his palace, eating a meal fit for a king, while right outside his gate sat poor Lazarus, begging for anything he could get, and the dogs licking his sores. James is addressing people just like they're storing, hoarding everything to themselves while they see the need that's around them. Again, on that Democratic side, it's kind of, I don't know what the right word is, hypocritical, silly, that those with the millions and millions and millions are talking about all the poor people, that they've done nothing with their millions and millions to do anything about. And that's the system of this world, and it's always going to be this way. You have heaped together treasure for the last days. I remember years ago seeing a family. They were ready for, I don't know what it was. You remember Y2K? Everything was going to shut down January 1st of 2000, so people bought generators. I was working at that time, and we sold generators like candy. We couldn't get enough generators for people to buy. January 2nd, they were trying to bring them back. No, we're not taking them back. I've seen people even long before that were preparing for, I don't know, the end days where, and you walked in and they had a little bomb shelter, storm shelter downstairs, and you walked in and they had the dry goods and the canned goods and all that kind of stuff that was going to get them through, whatever they was going to get them through. And I got news for you. The minute somebody else found out they had it when they didn't have it, it was going to be World War III anyways. James is addressing that, the warning to the wealthy, the corruption of their wealth. Then verse 4 to 6, number letter B, the cry of their workers. The cry of their workers. Verse number 4 says this, behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. Notice when we talk about the cry of the workers, what's crying? The hire of the laborers, which is of you kept back by fraud. What we have here is these wealthy that he's talking about, they're making money hand over fist, they're doing better and better, but they're not paying their employees. The hire, that's what that is, their wages. The hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields crieth. They have withheld that which was rightfully due to their workers by fraud. Now, is that not a common problem? Is that not the issue that the government has tried forever and a day to try to fix? The whole institution of unions, workers' unions, was to address that problem. And it was a tremendous problem. If you had to read in high school The Grapes of Wrath, if you've read books about those slaughterhouses in Chicago and all that, and the wages paid and all that kind of stuff, all that, they needed someone to stand up for their rights. I understand all that. And that's what the Bible's talking about here. Those that had it and were employing the others were not paying them. Now, what's the solution to that? Take somebody above my pay grade to figure that one out. The politicians all seem to have the answers, but I just don't think they do either. And I don't say that as a slam. I don't think there's going to be an answer until Jesus Christ comes back. I think that's going to be the answer, because he's got a way of working all those things out. Back in Matthew 20. Look back at Matthew 20, and I know we'll run out of time, but oh well. Matthew 20. Remember the story about the man that went out and hired workers to go into his field? Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, there's minimum wage. Minimum wage is not a new thing. When he had agreed for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said unto them, go also into the vineyard, and whatever is right I will give you. Now let me ask you the question. In this story, this parable, who determines whatever is right? Not the employee. The employer. Whatever is right I will give thee. And they went their way. And again he went out about the sixth and the ninth hour and did likewise. He's not making promises he's not fulfilling. He said, whatsoever is right, I will give it thee. About the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing idle, and saith unto them, why stand ye here all the day idle? They said unto him, because no man hath hired us. He saith unto them, go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. So when even was come, the Lord of the vineyard saith unto his steward, call the laborers and give them their hire, beginning from the last unto the first. And when they came that were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. All right, those that got hired an hour before the work whistle went off and the day stopped. Those that got hired at the last hour, worked 1 hour, got a penny. Verse 9, and when they that came were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more. And they likewise received every man a penny. Uh-oh. Now you got trouble on your hands. There's trouble right here in River City. You know what I'm talking about. Verse 11, when they had received it, they murmured against the good man of the house, saying, these last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden and the heat of the day. But he answered unto them and said, friend, I do thee no wrong. Didst thou not agree with me for a penny? Take that as thine and go thy way. I will give it unto the last even as unto thee. Is it not lawful for me to do what I will with mine own? An interesting story. We live in different times, don't they? You know, those ones that worked early that murmured, they would have formed a union. They would have hired a lawyer. They would have gone after that employer. They would have demanded higher wages. They would have shut his operation down because they wanted more money. Anybody that claims they have a solution to all that, I don't think they really do. And I'm not claiming I know the solution. But I know this, the government's never the solution. President Reagan told us that. The government's never the solution. The government's always the problem. And we trust the government to sort all that stuff out now. One other thing in Luke chapter 3, notice this. Luke chapter 3. This is Bible. I know sometimes Bible crosses into common problems in society, but we don't ignore those places in the Bible for that reason. Luke chapter 3, verse 12, and there came also publicans to be baptized and said unto him, Master, what shall we do? And he said unto them, the publicans, exact no more than that which is appointed you. That was a problem with the publicans, the tax collectors, you know the story. Nicodemus was one of them. They would charge exorbitant taxes to cover what Rome demanded, plus to pad their own pockets. So the Lord said to them when they were baptized, exact no more of that which is due. He knew the publican's problem. And the soldiers, verse 14, likewise demanded, saying, and what shall we do? See, the Lord knows each individual. He knew the publican's problem. He knows the soldier's problem. And he said unto them, do violence to no man, neither accuse any falsely. Right? Do violence to no man. The word falsely goes with that also. Do violence to no man, neither accuse any falsely. So a soldier's job is to do violence when he's called upon to do it. But then he says at the end of verse 14, and be content with your wages. You know what the problem in the military is? Complaining about not having enough money. And, to a big degree, they're probably right. So who fixes that? The government can. See, our reliance now is on the government to fix all the problems. And again, those things are beyond my understanding and comprehension, but I know this in James chapter 5 and verse 4, the higher, the wages cried out. The higher of them, the higher of the laborers who have reaped on your fields cry out. Trying to find solutions today. Can we just say there's not going to be an easy solution? I'm glad I'm not involved in the process. I just get to sit and watch. Everybody screaming and yelling about minimum wage, $15 an hour. And I just sit back and say, this is going to be fun to watch. Someone says, you know, well, there's a mother working at McDonald's that's raising 3 kids on her own and she's only making so much at McDonald's. Well, you know, McDonald's used to be an entry-level position. Not a job that you got to support a family. And if you want to support, and here I'm just shooting off into nowhere here. If you want to support a family and make $15 an hour, then we're going to be paying $10 for a hamburger. And you know what will happen? They'll replace that $15 worker with a little kiosk that you go in so they can keep the hamburger down at $5. And then we complain about the kiosk. Then we complain about Walmart and the self-serve aisles going out while we scream and holler for more money, more money, more money. I don't know the fix. I just know this. Until Jesus Christ comes back, it's going to be an ongoing problem. I remember my daughter Sarah about 12 years ago, 13 years ago, worked at Kmart. And Kmart used to have all kinds of tellers at the registers for the people shopping. In fact, they had so many there. Sarah told me the biggest problem she had working there is that the day went so slow because she'd be standing at the head of her aisle waiting for people to come and get in line to buy stuff. She spent most of her time, her 8-hour shift, waiting for somebody to come up there. They had so many employees going to keep their wages up and keep all that. You know what happened to Kmart, right? They're not around anymore. So the other option is to put in a few people at the register and the scanners going through that and everybody yells and screams. Nobody's going to be happy no matter what anybody does. Can we just kind of conclude that? James says, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields crieth. As long as people's eyes are on dollar signs, they're never going to be happy. They're never going to be content. The hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields crieth. The cries of them which have reaped, which is of you kept back by fraud. The Old Testament was very strong on its emphasis of not withholding wages. We don't have time, but if you want to write down these references, Deuteronomy 24, verse 14 and 15. Under the law, they were commanded not to withhold wages from the employees. In fact, back in those days, they were paid them at the end of the day. They were not to hire them for a day, have them work, and then not pay them, and go into the next day. In Leviticus 19 and 13. So under the law, don't withhold wages. In the prophets, Jeremiah 22, 13. And then Jesus Christ, in the passage we just read, Matthew chapter 20, verse 1 to 16. Paying them at the end of the day. Making sure they got a day's wages for a day's work. But they were keeping back. These rich men were keeping it back. And the Bible says the cries are entered into the ears of the Lord of the Sabbath. The Lord hears. The Lord is going to address the problem. The Lord is going to fix it one of these days. There's going to be injustice in this life. It doesn't mean we have to like it. Doesn't mean we have to accept it, but we need to understand it. There's going to be injustice. James is addressing that between and among these folks. Verse number 5, he says to them, "You have lived in pleasure on the earth." Again, addressing those rich men. "You have lived in pleasure on the earth and have been wanton." The word wanton means, though you live in pleasure, you still have things you want. I think it was one of the Rockefellers. They said, "How much money is enough?" And he said, "One more dollar. One more dollar." All the money in the world can't get them what they want. J. Paul Getty was one of the richest men in the world. I think he died in 67 or 76. I can't remember which it is. I'm dyslexic right now. But he was worth $6 billion when he died. J. Paul Getty, $6 billion. That should be one happy man. He was married 5 times. The first 4 of his marriages, none of them lasted more than 4 years. First one was 2 years, second one was 2 years. His second and third wife, both were 17-year-olds when he married them. 3 of those first wives had sons, and he married the following wife before he was divorced from the previous wife in 2 of those different occasions. He just had a troubled life. Had to pay all of them alimony and child support. The last wife he was married to for about 20, I think 18 years. He was hardly ever home. That's probably why the marriage lasted so long. They had a son who at 6 years old developed a brain tumor that caused him to go blind. And the woman tried to get the money out of J. Paul Getty to take care of the child's hospital bills, and he murmured and complained about having to pay for his own son's hospital. And when the boy died at 12 years of age, he didn't even fly back from Europe to come to the funeral. The richest man in the world. $6 billion. That was when he died. I think I saw that estimated now that would be $21 billion in current money is what he had. What a miserable life. Such unhappiness. After his son died, that wife divorced him too. You know what J. Paul Getty said? "I would give all my money for just one happy marriage." $6 billion. "I would give all my money for one happy marriage." You've lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. Money doesn't have the answers. Hate to get secular on you, but the Beatles told you so. Can't buy me love. J. Paul Getty found that out. "You have nourished your hearts," he said in verse 6, "as in a day of slaughter." Nourished your hearts as in a day. You know what James is saying? You're fattening yourselves up for the kill. Like that rich man that fared sumptuously every day. "You have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter." Verse 6, "You've condemned and killed the just." They've taken advantage of those under their employment. They have defrauded them. They've mistreated them. And verse 6 closes with saying this, "And he," God, "he doth not resist you." He doth not resist you. You know what the problem with many skeptics or atheists or agnostics is? If there is a God, why doesn't he do something? about whatever it is they're talking about. If there's a God, why are these things happening in this country and that's going on there? And why is there child molestation? And why is there this and that? If there's a God, why? That's exactly what he's saying. He says, God doesn't resist you. God has let you do what you're going to do. But there's a payday someday. There's a payday someday. There's going to be an accountability. So here we have the warning to the wealthy, the corruption of their wealth and the cry of their workers. Next time we'll get together in verse 7 to 12. Let's stand together this evening with our heads bowed and our eyes closed.